Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for coming along to the first of this year's CELS lunchtime seminars. We have a great programme and a great start to that programme. And can I begin by welcoming Andriana Subratusheva, who is Director in Directorate E of DG Employment, Social Affairs, Social Inclusion. Andriana has held many positions, including in Bulgarian government, working in the cabinet of the Consumer Affairs Commissioner, and now working the front line in DG Employment. I think what will be so fantastic about our speaker today is to get that inside perspective on the institutional dynamics of the European Union, what it's like to have to work between the institutions, particularly in the context of the post-Lisbon Treaty framework. So without further ado, please welcome our speaker, Andriana. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I would like to thank everybody for the interest today. I'm glad I made it because I had a bit problem getting to Cambridge today, but that's fine. As Kenneth said, I'm in charge of the negotiations for the next programming period of a set of regulations dealing with the implementation of the cohesion policy. And being in DG Employment, I'm dealing with European Social Fund regulation. And I would like to explain how things have happened. First, explaining the process according to the Lisbon Treaty of decision making at EU level, and then at the real implementation of the provisions of the Lisbon Treaty. DG Employment is one of the 36 Directorate General in the European Commission, and we are dealing not only with the policy development in the area of employment and social policy and social protection, but also we have the instrument, financial instrument, to support member states in implementing these policy decisions. And that's the charm of DG Employment, because that's the only DG in the European Commission where you have both the policy making and the financial support for that implementation in one in the same Directorate General. As you know, the Lisbon Treaty entered into force on the 1st of December 2009, and it set up as an ordinary legislative procedure for adoption of any legislation, a co-decision which gives equal power to the European Council and the European Parliament in deciding on any regulation or directive or decision. Until 2009, the co-decision or the equal power between the two institutions was covering 44 policy areas, and now it is extended to 85 policy areas. And of course, the new ones are agriculture, cohesion policy, judicial affairs, lots of legislation and legislative related rights and regulations in the European Union and among member states and with third countries. But according to the Article 294 of the Lisbon Treaty, the only right of initiative for legislation lies with the European Commission. And the European Commission is given a task to develop a certain legislation. And I can explain the internal process for that development, because that's also an interesting one. After the College of Commissioners adopts a legislation, be it a directive or a regulation or a decision, it is sent right away to the Council and Parliament, and also to the national parliaments. But in order to get to the text of a regulation or directive adopted by the College of Commissioners, we have first to draft a regulation and also to prepare an impact assessment of that regulation. And that's one of the requirements which was voluntarily introduced by the Commission in the last 10 years, to make sure that any legislative decision is first justified, it doesn't breach subsidiarity with the member states. Second, it is solving a problem which is common to all member states, and which would be best solved if action is taken at EU level, not at national level. And keeping in mind the very close link and the very close interlinks that exist between member states in many areas, in many policy areas, as it was agreed now, we think that EU-level action is needed. So the impact assessment is a document which is again prepared by the services. It's not prepared by an external company or anybody. It's prepared by the services. It has to justify first why we have identified this as a problem. We put it in the context of the development of the European Union. Then we have to identify which are the possible ways to address this problem. And then we choose one of these ways and we justify why we made that choice. And there is an impact assessment board where I can tell you it's not easy to defend any legislation. There are seven wise men and women from the European Commission which are sitting there appointed in their personal capacity, and they can ask any questions. They have to be the first kind of check that you convince the outside world, outside of your service, that this is a needed legislative act. The Impact Assessment Board issues their opinion, which sometimes is unfavorable. So you have to redraft, you have to rethink and remake a legislation. And the adoption of this legislation by the college is always accompanied by a positive opinion from the Impact Assessment Board. Nothing can be adopted by the college if there is a negative opinion of the Impact Assessment Board. As I mentioned, the next stage is that this draft, this legislation adopted by the college is circulated to the Parliament, Council and all national parliaments. And according to the new Lisbon Treaty, the national parliaments have 8 weeks to react. They can consider that certain legislation is breaching subsidiarity, or it is an action which is not required at EU level, or not justified at EU level. And if one third of the national parliaments say that they do not support this legislation, the Commission can withdraw, amend, or revise the proposed legislation. If, however, half of the national parliaments oppose it and say that it's a serious breach of national interest and positions, then the Commission is authorized and obliged to withdraw it. So the first one is the yellow card and the second one is the orange card. Luckily, not for many regulations so far, there have been yellow cards and orange cards issued, but there were some in the last 2 years. Once the regulation in our case, because I've been so far done dealing with the European Social Fund regulation for the next programming period, the Common Provisions Regulation, which covers all funds implemented under shared management, which are the European Social Fund, European Regional Development Fund, the Cohesion Fund, and now the European Agriculture Fund for Rural Development and European Maritime and Fisheries Fund. So these two regulations got favorable opinions from the Impact Assessment Board. They didn't get any signal of negative reaction from the national parliaments. And on the 6th of October 2011, they were adopted by college, and the Polish presidency of the European Union at that time started right away discussions and negotiations with the member states. Because the process, once these documents are sent officially to the two co-legislators, the Council and the Parliament, they are examined in details and opinions are issued on these two documents. But the final decision on these opinions is happening in an intensive dialogue initially with the member states in the framework of the Structural Actions Working Party. And we don't count how many meetings so far we have had. We had almost twice a week, in average, a meeting discussing the regulations, because it's the full set of regulations that are linked to the implementation of the shared management funds in terms of cohesion policy, and also they're quite big documents. So the Council decided to examine the regulations block by block. So they started with strategic programming, financial management, financial issues, monitoring and control, information and communication. And after a set of blocks where things were advancing, member states got an internal agreement among themselves with qualified majority that a certain amendment to this regulation is needed or a certain other type of change, then they go to the meeting of the permanent representatives, which is called COREPER, and the decisions of this expert level group are confirmed at political level, because we have the heads of the national representations sitting in Brussels, members of this COREPER meetings. At the same time, the European Parliament is assigning the respective legislation to its responsible policy committee. In the case of cohesion policy, there are two responsible committees. One is the regional policy committee of the European Parliament, and the other one is the employment policy committee. These committees identify a rapporteur to examine in details the legislation, and they have a shadow rapporteur usually as well. And they also set up a small negotiating team on behalf of the Parliament. And this team consists of representatives of the different political parties that are members of this respective committee. And since the process of taking an opinion or drafting an opinion on each of the articles of the very long regulations, the Common Provision Regulation is 146 articles, DSF regulation is only 19, but still we had thousands of comments and proposals for amendments. Parliament takes a bit longer to draft their opinion and to vote it in the respective committee. So the discussions in the Parliament, in the Council, were much more advanced on these specific identified blocks than the Parliament. And there was a kind of 8 months time lag, because the Parliament adopted their opinions on the regulations only in July 2012. After the Parliament adopted their opinions, we started the so-called trilogues. And these are, in fact, negotiations that happen between the Council and the Parliament. The Parliament is presented by the negotiating team. The Council is represented by a different team every 6 months, due to the presidency that is taken over by a different member state in 6 months periods. So we started with the Polish presidency, then we had the Danish, then we had the Cypriot, then we had the Irish, and now we are negotiating with the Lithuanian presidency. So the co-legislators are always inviting the Commission to these meetings, because the Commission is very often asked to find a better formulation, or to find a formulation of an agreement which is reached between the two co-legislators. So these trilogues, I can share with you that so far on the Common Provision Regulation we have had about 50 trilogues, and on the European Social Fund Regulation we had 26, so we've completed it luckily. These trilogues are very important, especially at this stage, because these new policy areas where the European Parliament has achieved the right to be a co-legislator, and with the authority of the Parliament being directly elected members, citizens of the European Union, representing everyone there, very often there are diverging and difficult to get together on certain points, because the interests of the member states' governments, which are represented in the Council, are not always coinciding with the attempts of or some of the wishes of the members of the European Parliament may lead to a further administrative burden for the managers at member state level, or additional requirements that are imposed to beneficiaries and end recipients. So to find this balance, the Commission is very often asked to propose a new way. So we have made a number of amendments, a number of additional simplifications to the regulations. We have no choice now, we have to finalize the negotiations in the trilogues and make sure that these regulations are adopted by November, because the 1st of January 2014 is the date of entry into force of the new multi-annual financial framework, where the funding for this policy is agreed. So now we have become more we've reached to the level where we have agreed on any possible technical solution. In order to, whenever you've had so many discussions and you have not reached an agreement between the two co-legislators, time comes for political trialogues. And the political trialogues are at two levels. One is at the level of the chairperson of the committee, respective committee of the parliament. On behalf of the council, that's the ambassador, the permanent representative of the presiding member state. And from the European Commission, it's the commission in charge of cohesion policy. So these political trialogues are very difficult also because in order to change a position of the council, the presidency has to go back to the expert, first to the expert group and then to the political decision makers. And since it takes time, we found ourselves that our initial ambition to finish the draft regulations and get a technical agreement on the content by the end of June turned really very difficult. Now we are at the very last stage, but usually the last 10 meters are most difficult. That's also a matter of truth. And we will have probably a few more trialogues within the next 2 weeks, and then we'll finalize, hopefully, and make sure that by end of November, the texts adopted first by Parliament are confirmed in the Council and they're published in the official journal. The final texts are signed by the two institutions, so the presiding, I want to mention on the other high-level political trialogue, because sometimes issues linked to implementation of the budget for the next 7 years are linked to the agreement which should be reached on the multi-annual financial framework. And since the multi-annual financial framework is not yet signed, the agreement is not there yet. Technical agreement was reached beginning of July, but it is not voted yet in plenary in the parliament. So before it's voted in the parliament, it cannot be confirmed by the council. And there is, again, time play to link the decisions on the key spending instruments of the multi-annual financial framework, which are the cohesion policy and the common agriculture policy and the fishery policies, and the respective fund-specific legislation for the implementation of these policies. But as I said, the pressure is very high, both on the members of the European Parliament and on the members of the Council. And sometimes these issues linking the multi-annual financial framework to the regulations, the fund-specific implementing rules, are taken up to the level of the President of the European Commission, the President of the European Parliament, and the President of the presiding member state. So Mrs. Grybauskaitė, who is the President of Lithuania, comes to Brussels for meetings with Mr. Barroso and Mr. Schulz. And once they decide, luckily, then we have to find a technical way to implement. But that's also good. If you know what you have to, within what frame you have to work, it's easier. And since, as I mentioned, we started 2 years ago negotiations. It's really 2 years now on the set of regulations in relation to the cohesion policy funding. I have learned a lot of lessons about how you approach the Council when you sit in the expert group and how you approach the European Parliament. And there is one very important rule. You have to be open to both institutions. The Commission is communicating at the same time to both institutions. Whatever we are asked to prepare as a background or justification or additional information, we share it right away with both institutions. It's a very open process. All the, in fact, the whole decision-making process is very open, I may say, because starting with the impact assessments, they are public. They are available on the website of the European Commission. All the opinions adopted by the European Parliament are also available on the website of the European Parliament. And that's one element which keeps the credibility and the confidence among the three institutions at stake and well placed. There are a number of cases where I've personally found out that if I had half an hour more, I would have been much better prepared. Because you go, we work on a four-column table. We have the position of the Commission, the initial proposal of the Commission in the first column, article per article. We have the second column with the proposal on behalf of the Council, and it's called general approach of the Council. And we have the amendments coming from the Parliament. So when the three institutions sit, they check each of the articles and they try to find the common way and the common agreement on each article. And in the fourth column, we keep track of what was the position expressed and the trialogue by the Council, by the Parliament, by the Commission. And the best way is when you go to any type of negotiations that you have facts and figures. This is unquestionable. You can preach political speeches all day long. When you tell the figures, when you show up a chart or you show how member states are placed and what are the problems and what's the change in the economic situation, this is unquestionable by nobody. And that, I think, is a very important thing to be kept in mind, that just giving arguments and justifications of different types is best supported by figures and facts. And this has helped in a number of cases to get to an easier and final agreement on certain articles. And then I found out that the team that you set up, no matter which institution you are in, that's a very important part of the negotiation, because you have one person sitting there expressing the opinions and so on. But all his background information comes from the team, and the team is there and listens. So anybody who has a nice idea how you can convince that this is the best way to approach a problem and this is the best possible proposal for, be it financial management or on the management and control setup in the member states, this is any idea from the team sometimes becomes crucial for the advancement of the negotiations. We've had stalemates as well. We've had, we do not agree, we go away. That's also a possible way of negotiations. Now, since there's no time, anything that's not agreed is taken up to the hierarchy, as we say. And that's why we hope that very soon we'll finalize all the regulations and the legislation will be in place on time for the member states. But at least we got a clear understanding and the clear support that the legislation for the next programming period should be more result-oriented, should be simplified to the extent possible, which is really a tricky thing, because simplifying financial management is not easy, because you have the financial regulation, which gives the frame. So whatever you simplify, you have to be sure that you are not in breach of the financial regulation. You cannot derogate of the main principles of the financial regulation. You can always try in the common provisions regulation, which encompasses five funds, to make sure that there is a possibility, due to the specificity of a certain policy area, to make certain derogations in the fund-specific regulation. But you have to signal this in the common provision regulation, because the objective is that we go forward for a set of regulation which have clarity and one approach for all member states, for all funds. So far, we had different rules for the agriculture policy, for the rural development. We had different rules for the cohesion policy regulations, for the fisheries policies. And since all member states and all institutions have to do more with less resources, we wanted to make sure that at least you don't need an exorbitant number of people who understand the process and procedures. And we, at the same time, make sure that we safeguard the financial interests of the European Union, because that's the responsibility of the European Commission. We have no chance of and that's why DG Budget is always present, I can tell you. It's not only the key DGs that the policy is responsible, but DG Budget is always there to make sure that we are not promising or taking a commitment on something that's really not in line with the rules and the provisions of the financial regulation. And I want to have some time for questions, and yeah. I can talk for hours, you know. I'm not a person who is shy, and in the last 2 years I've gained a lot of experience talking to people, so I have no problems.
Well, I think what we'll do is give you a little time to catch your breath,
yeah.
And we'll take some questions. What I wanted to do, yeah, while you're catching your breath is really try and pick out three themes that I think are really important,
mm-hmm,
because what's great is you talk about the experience from within a particular, yeah, DG, but yet the things you talk about are so true of the legislative process.
No, it's for everybody.
At EU
this is true. This
EU
is a rule. This is a procedure.
Anyway, so I just thought it'd be worth just highlighting maybe three things that are just kind of generally true from what you've said. I think the first real big trend is that pre-legislative scrutiny,
yeah,
that takes place, the better regulation, the,
yeah,
smarter regulation agenda, which demands that the Commission services really think through what the impact of the proposals are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as you hinted at the end, the post-legislative review, post-legislative simplification. Okay, so we agreed all this complex legislation. What do we know about how it worked? Are there ways of making it more usable for the member states, etc., etc.? And in between there, we've got a kind of more political process of pre-legislative scrutiny through subsidiarity review, etc. So we've got much more of that kind of pre-legislative, post-legislative scrutiny of the legislative proposals and outcomes themselves. The second thing is this kind of consensus formation,
yes,
issue, which again is changing in the kind of post-Lisbon, mm-hmm, context,
yeah,
but you talked about consensus formation in the council. Well, we know that if you look at the treaty, there are all these rules on voting rules, but what we also find out is that a lot of the time, it's just about trying to get consensus anyway.
Yes.
You know, in the background, an informal desire for more consensus so that the member states don't have to vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in fact, as you know very well, yeah, I mean, the number of actual votes that take place on legislation,
yeah,
is now increasingly rare.
Absolutely rare, yeah.
That's largely due to the other thing that, mm-hmm, you talked about is this trilogue. I mean, it's an odd European word. Many European phrases are odd, like subsidiarity, but trilogue, that,
yeah,
negotiation between the institutions, the important roles played by the rotating council presidency, etc. So these are all features that we see right across the legislative process.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one thing to highlight is that increasingly these attempts at informal consensus, trilogue, are there to try and reach an early agreement.
Yeah.
Not have to wait months and negotiate fully through the formal legislative process as laid down in the treaties, but to actually try and negotiate, get as much consensus as early as possible.
Yeah.
Is that your experience as well?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Early agreement of dossiers is important. But let me start with a question and then I'll
mm-hmm
throw open that. It's a more provocative question. You,
okay,
said that the process was transparent.
Yes.
I think that's true when you talk about the impact assessment side of things. It's very open. These documents are all open. But I think some people criticise the trilogue process, the informality of that, as being maybe less transparent. So I wondered if you would comment on that. Perhaps tricky balancing act of informality,
mm-hmm,
and transparency. Informality to get results, transparency to be open to the kind,
mm-hmm,
of.
You're right.
And
in fact, even before a regulation is drafted, there is public consultation always on the main elements. So we start even before finalizing the text of a regulation or directive, we have a public consultation. So anybody can give their ideas, and stakeholders are usually very active. On the consensus, if the Parliament, we call these trilogues that we are convening now for 1 year and a few months, we're calling them informal.
Mm.
They're not the formal first reading even, because the objective is that we reach a consensus before the first reading of plenary in Parliament, which allows them to vote, But they know that this text is already agreed with the Council, and in 2 weeks' time it will be confirmed by the Council, because that's the process. The transparency is there in terms that you know the position of everyone. You know the mandate of the Commission's starting position. You know the mandate of the Presidency, which is representing the Council, because we have the general agreement reached the Council in the COREPER, and confirmed also sometimes in the General Affairs Council, in the case of our policy. And then you have the opinion and all proposed parliamentary amendments public. So you know where the starting points are. If there are amendments to the opinions of the Parliament, or of the, because very often you have to step aside or step back and say, okay, I can change this provision if you give me that one. We already had this stage a few months ago, when we managed to, when the Presidency and the Parliament were coming with the package. They say, in this chapter, there are 6 things that we don't have a common agreement on. So Council thinks that for us, the red line is these 2, and if Parliament could step on the other ones, we are ready to give them. So this consensus building is very important, and that's part of the first speedy adoption, but also accepting it as a common proposal and as a common legislation makes it more convincing for everybody to go and present it to those who have to implement, yep. Make sure that all interests are defended properly. And that's now, although there is a first reading possibility, second reading possibility, conciliation procedure still in the Lisbon Treaty, in very few areas we're going there.
So I think it's really important then when we, particularly when we're teaching about the EU's decision-making processes, it's one thing to look at the formal provisions of the treaty, but I think what we're hearing from you is how much of that goes on in the background. Mm-hmm. I want to open the floor up to some questions. I should start by apologising, I didn't even introduce myself. I'm Kenneth Armstrong, Professor of European Law here at Cambridge. So when you have a question, can you please introduce yourself so that Andriana knows who you are. So who wants to start with some questions?